Let's try it.
Okay.
Hello. Welcome to the joint meeting of the Planning Commission and the Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. This is Tuesday at 3 p.m. in the Veterans Memorial Building. I see the Planning Commission has all members are present. We have a quorum. Do we have a spokesperson for the...
Yes, Barbara Spagnola, Vice Chair. We also have a quorum present. Thank you, Gerald.
Okay. Thank you. So, do we have any comments for the items on the special agenda? Let's keep this really, really short.
No. Well, yeah, I got a comment. I go... A day before 4th of July, we're given this a few days before to make a decision that has intergenerational results. And I think that this is a lot of people are on vacation and stuff, and I think that this is being kind of crammed down our throat. And I think it's disingenuous, and you know it's a it's really not reflective of the due process that this this kind of caliber of project that needs to be done. I've been sitting on the Wharf CAC for 3.5 years now, and you know they've canceled meetings, and now we're fast tracking through this, and I think that it's really not nice to the community.
Okay, thank you, Richard. Joseph, any opening comments? Jesse? Barbara?
No, the only thing I wanted to say is when we open up for public comment, we do have speaker slips that they should present to Janine, or if not, put their name on the sign-in
thing. I think that's a good idea. Scott, we had planned for speaker slips, did we?
I believe they're in the back of the room.
Okay. Yeah. So, if you're planning on speaking, could you please fill out a slip and bring it up to the staff, and we'll get those. Okay, thank you, Barbara. Any other opening comments? Okay, great. Thank you. So, at this point, I think I'll turn it over to staff.
Okay. Thanks. You want to
go ahead?
Okay. Welcome, everybody. This is the regular scheduled time for our Wharf CAC, and we have a special meeting time for our Planning Commission start. This is for review of the final EIR. The draft EIR has been out for several months, and we've received a number of comments on that. Today we have Jennifer Jacobus from ESA joining us to make a brief presentation. We'll take comments from the Commission and Citizens Advisory Committee, and then open it up for public comment and return to the two boards for deliberation and recommendation to Council. This is not the final step in certification of an EIR. We're looking for recommendations to the City Council, which is tentatively scheduled to hear this item on August 14th. Scott?
Yeah, no, I think that about covers why we're here. It's for the both boards to make a recommendation to the City Council related to the adequacy of the environmental document as it relates to the California Environmental Quality Act. And I think you know, Rob covered the process that we're going to go through. We have a presentation and then questions from the Commission, public comment, and then deliberation. So I think with that, we probably should call Jennifer up and we can start the presentation and get going.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. Get started here.
This has already been covered. The purpose of the meeting is to give the opportunity for both commissions to provide direction to the City Council regarding certification of the final EIR and approval of the project. So I'm going to make a brief presentation to set the stage for everyone, and then we'll follow with the questions and input and discussion. My presentation is going to cover reiterate some things you've seen before, give an overview of the CEQA process, very brief project description review, a review of the draft EIR contents and conclusions, a review of the final EIR contents and conclusions, and then next steps. So to start off, CEQA is the California Environmental Quality Act, and it requires public agencies to identify the significant impacts of their projects and to disclose those impacts and find feasible mitigation measures, if possible. So this is just a slide that presents some of the basic goals of CEQA, which is disclosure of potentially significant environmental impacts. It requires the agencies to reduce those impacts by identifying feasible mitigation measures and alternatives. And it's also an informational document. So it's an informational document that's used as a decision-making tool for agencies to consider those impacts prior to project approval. This schematic is a basic overview of the CEQA process for an environmental impact report, which essentially happens in three stages. So not that clear, I apologize for that in the room here, but the first stage is green. It's sort of the initial scoping process. The blue is the draft EIR. The orange is the final EIR, and we're in that stage. In 2016, we issued the notice of preparation and went through the scoping process where we took input from stakeholders and agencies in the community about what we wanted to see covered in the environmental impact report. We had a public meeting in August of 2016 and a comment period for 30 days to take public input at that time. Then we prepared the draft EIR. That was released in March of 2018. It was noticed and made available for 45 days. We had a public meeting in April and took public comment at that time as well. When the 45-day period ended, all of the comment letters that were received and the oral comments that were received at the public meeting were compiled, and all of the comments were responded to, and that's what's in the final environmental impact report. And I'll cover next steps where we go from here, but so right now we're at the stage where the final EIR has been released, and the next step will be the certification process, but I'll get back to that at the end. Overview again of the project location. So as you know, the project is located primarily within the city of Morro Bay, with the exception of the WRF site itself is in unincorporated San Luis Obispo County. And the entire project is located within the coastal zone, which is shown by the blue line in the figure. So the project overall is being implemented to meet the requirements of the State Water Resources Control Board. The proposed project is going to provide tertiary wastewater treatment services for the city of Morro Bay. And there are essentially, you can break it down into five different components of the project. There's the treatment component, which is the new WRF. There's the collection component, which includes a new lift station and a pipeline to pump raw and treated wastewater flows to and from the WRF. There's a distribution component, which will take the recycled water produced at the WRF and convey it to new groundwater injection wells. And there are two alternative pipeline alignments and injection well areas that are considered in the EIR. There's the indirect potable reuse component of the project, whereby the advanced treated recycled water will be recharged into the Morro Valley groundwater basin and then extracted using existing city wells to produce a new component to the water supply for the city. And then the last component of the project is the decommissioning of the treatment plant. Once the city's project is online and the Cayuco Sanitary District's project as well is online, then the existing treatment plant will be decommissioned. So those are the basic components of the project as we've broken them down and considered them in the environmental impact report. And this is a figure that shows those components. The WRF is the yellow polygon on the right-hand side. The two lift station options are shown in the vicinity of the existing treatment plant. There's a pipeline alignment in the kind of blue and turquoise is the alignment for the raw/treated wastewater to go to and from the WRF. And then there's that same alignment, as well as the red pipeline, is the two alternatives being considered for the recycled water pipelines that would bring the water to the injection well sites. And those red and blue kind of shaded polygons show the two injection well alternative sites that were analyzed. And then we have the existing treatment plant for decommissioning. So those are all the components of the project.
Excuse me. Could you show, while we're at this point, could you please show the alternate pipeline route up there for the public?
Sure. So, I guess I can do it with...
Do you have a laser? Okay.
So this... Let's see if I can get this. I'll just try to talk loudly, but the red...
If you could just kind of trace it out on there, and then you can come back to the mic, please.
Yeah, so the red, I can do it on here.
Okay. Okay.
So the blue line is the alignment for the raw and treated wastewater to and from the WRF, from the lift station to the WRF. For the recycled water pipelines to the injection wells, there's the alternative might include that same alignment, as well as the red line is the alternative alignment. So those are two alignments being considered for the recycled water pipeline.
Okay, then there was another alternative that went down the Embarcadero.
So that's coming, that's part of the alternatives analysis. That's not part of the full project that was evaluated in the EIR. So that I have a slide that will show that subsequently.
Okay,
yes. So the City Council refined and adopted project objectives in 2017. There's more than shown here, but I've pulled out the few that are most pertinent to the environmental analysis and the EIR. So the objectives are to produce tertiary disinfected wastewater in accordance with Title 22 of the California Code of Regulations, to produce reclaimed wastewater to augment the city's water supply, to treat and design the project to treat and minimize impacts from contaminants of emerging concern in the wastewater in the future, and to ensure compatibility with neighboring land uses. So for the draft EIR, the contents of the EIR include impact analysis, direct, indirect, and cumulative impact analysis for the resources that are shown here on the slide as required by CEQA and the CEQA guidelines. So there's a chapter for each one of these resources and thresholds within those chapters and an impact analysis for each resource in the draft EIR. We also have an analysis of growth inducement, which is required, and an alternatives analysis as well. So I'm going to step through this briefly. The impact analysis methodology is a four-step process that we go through. For each one of those resources, we have to first establish the baseline environmental conditions, which are essentially conditions on the ground today, give or take, since the notice of preparation was published in 2016. Then the impacts, then the project construction and operation activities are considered and evaluated against the baseline condition to determine impacts. Then we consider regulatory requirements as well as potential mitigation measures to determine if impacts can be mitigated so that they're not at a level of significance.
I got a question for you on that.
Yes.
On your baseline environmental conditions established, are your baselines based on post-Cayucas, or are they baseline at what it is at this time?
They are, for the most part, they're what they are today.
Okay.
Yes.
Because one of the...
Richard, let's not go into comments. You had a question. Let's keep it.
Hey, you know, Jerry, I've been on WharfTech for 3.5 years, yes, and had not been able to have an open discussion on this. Okay?
As soon as she finishes her presentation.
Well, this is pertinent to what she's talking about here, because I'm wanting to get clarity on what the baseline environmental conditions are.
Okay.
Okay?
Let's keep it to questions.
Okay. So here's a question for you. With Cayucas leaving, our baseline for H2S produced from a lift station is zero. Okay? So how are you addressing the lift station H2S issue on the proposed lift station? It's a class one, it becomes a class one impact, correct? From a CEQA standpoint.
I prefer not answer that on the fly at the moment.
Okay. That's one of my questions that was here, and it wasn't answered. It was... That's why my question is where your baselines are.
Okay. We will try to answer your question to your satisfaction. Once impacts are identified, potential mitigation measures are identified, then significance determinations are also then identified based on the level of significance that you're left with after applying mitigation measures. So we have four different classes that we identify in the EIR. The first one are significant and unavoidable impacts, class one. So these are impacts that can't be reduced below the threshold, even with the application, in some cases, of mitigation measures. Class two are impacts that are significant but can be mitigated to below levels of significance. Class three are impacts that are not significant and don't require any mitigation measures. Class four are beneficial impacts, and then there's some impacts that where there's just no impact due to the project. So the draft EIR identifies the only significant and unavoidable impacts to cultural resources, and this is associated with the project component that's associated with our construction of the pipelines and injection wells and potentially some operational maintenance activities. The resources that would be impacted by the construction of the pipeline, potentially by the construction and pipeline of the wells, are historical, archaeological, paleontological resources and human remains. So the EIR includes up to 14 mitigation measures that are applicable in order to try to avoid or lessen these significant impacts. And one of the mitigation measures does try to state as a first step to try to avoid impacts to resources through project redesign. And if that's not possible, there's a series of other mitigation measures that include recovery plans, treatment plans, and mitigation and monitoring plans during project construction in order to lessen any potentially significant impacts. Although the EIR acknowledges that even with application of some of these mitigation measures, there's no guarantee that there'll be no impacts to cultural resources. So we have one significant and unavoidable impact at this time. For the remainder of the resources, impacts can be reduced below the thresholds of significance. The ones that are in bold have mitigation measures associated with them. The resources that are not in bold, then there's no mitigation measures required for any impacts that have been identified. There are some beneficial impacts that have been identified. One is to flood hazards. So the decommissioning of the treatment plant of the current wastewater treatment plant would remove some critical infrastructure from the coastal flood hazard area. So this is determined to be a beneficial impact. Oops. Okay, sorry about that. Be careful with my buttons. The wastewater treatment requirements associated with the project are going to exceed those that are required by the regional board. So this has been determined to be a beneficial impact. The level of treatment for the wastewater will be more than is required by state requirements. The wastewater treatment capacity is going to meet the future build-out scenarios for the general plan update and is going to create new infrastructure that has greater reliability and would have reduce any potential interruptions in the future. So that's a beneficial impact. And water supply entitlements. So use of the recycled water for indirect potable reuse provides a new greater water supply reliability and a new renewable local water supply. So that's a fourth beneficial impact in the EIR. So now turning to alternatives analysis. The alternatives analysis for purposes of CEQA is a very specific analysis. As stated in the EIR, the purpose is to find, similar to mitigation measures, alternatives are used to see if there's a way to mitigate any significant impacts. So the EIR, the considerations in selecting the alternatives are, can you lessen any significant environmental impacts with an alternative, with the consideration of also being able to meet the project objectives. And feasibility is a consideration for alternatives as well. So feasible means capable of being accomplished in a successful manner within a reasonable period of time, taking into account economic, environmental, legal, social, and other technological factors. So those are the things we're looking for in the alternatives analysis or in the EIR. It's not necessarily any and all alternatives to the project. But the EIR does acknowledge that a significant amount of work has gone into the siting for the project and location screening for the project leading up to this point. So there is an overview in the alternatives chapter about the different sites that were considered prior to the CEQA process even starting for the WRF location. It provides an overview of the considerations of joint ventures with Cayucos and with Los Osos. It discusses a corporation yard alternative, which at one point was considered to be included at the new WRF site. It discusses a lift station location screening that was done. There were 8 locations considered leading up to the 2 that are included in the EIR. And it also provides an overview of the various recycled water reuse alternatives that were considered as well, leading up to the decision to include indirect potable reuse in the project in the EIR. So this is all summarized as context for the alternatives analysis as well. But the EIR includes 3 project alternatives. The first one is a pipeline alignment alternative, which is the one you were getting at. So in order to determine if there's an alternative that could lessen or avoid the significant impacts to cultural resources, which are generally speaking in the vicinity of Morrow Creek, another pipeline alignment was considered to see if impacts could be lessened. And that alignment is shown on here. It's light, but it does go along the Embarcadero. you can kind of see it very lightly. It's kind of a light, it's a brownish color in this figure on the screen. And the analysis concludes that although there may be fewer cultural sites, this alternative doesn't completely eliminate the potential for there to be significant impacts to cultural resources. It's also a slightly longer alignment. So there could be greater impacts to, say, air quality and traffic due to construction of that alignment through a more highly developed area. So that's one alternative in the EIR. There's also a WRF design alternative. There were no significant impacts associated with the WRF site itself. However, a design alternative was considered to see if removing the advanced treatment facilities could perhaps reduce the WRF size and footprint and the energy consumption associated with that. And the outcome of that was there was not necessarily a guarantee of a substantial footprint reduction. The mitigation measures that are in the EIR would all essentially still apply to this alternative. And one of the key objectives for providing recycled water and augmenting water supply would not be met with this alternative. The third alternative is the no project alternative, which is a requirement of CEQA to include in an EIR. And as the draft EIR states, it's required to allow decision makers to compare the impacts of approving the proposed project versus the impacts associated with not approving and moving forward with the project. So the no project alternative would essentially be continued operation of the existing wastewater treatment plant, but with upgrades to meet state standards for the wastewater treatment and water quality that's required. So this alternative would, in fact, reduce significant impacts to cultural resources. But it eliminates beneficial impacts of removing the critical infrastructure from the coastal hazard, the flooding zone area. It would require a coastal development permit still from the Coastal Commission, which has been determined to be not feasible in this location. And it does not meet several of the major project objectives, such as supplying recycled water for to augment water supply, upgrading to tertiary treatment, and the objectives about designing for contaminants of emerging concern. So CEQA requires identification of an environmentally superior alternative. The no project alternative cannot be the environmentally superior alternative. So when comparing the project to the other two feasible alternatives, the outcome of the EIR is that the proposed project meets all the objectives and is the environmentally superior alternative because the other two alternatives don't necessarily avoid or lessen any significant impacts. Okay, so now I'm going to move on to the final EIR. So the contents of the final EIR include all the comment letters that we received to the draft EIR, as well as a summary of the oral comments that we received at the public meeting we had during the public review period for the draft EIR. It includes responses to those comment letters and also requires a summary of any modifications that were made to the draft as a result of the comments. For responding to comments, CEQA requires the city to evaluate the comments on significant environmental issues received from parties that have reviewed the draft EIR. It requires them to provide a written response. But the focus is on responding to comments about the significant environmental issues in the draft EIR. So as an overview, 35 comment letters were received. 8 were from public agencies. There were letters from 1 tribal entity, 4 non-governmental organizations, and 22 members of the public. All but the members of the public are listed on the screen here. The final EIR content then starts with a couple of master responses. So there were common themes that came up in multiple comment letters. So in order to more efficiently respond to those, some master responses were developed in order to address all of those comments at once. So we have master responses for three topics. One is alternatives. Second one is the WRF site and annexation process. And a third one has to do with accidental spills and impacts to the Morro Bay estuary. So those are our three master responses. Following that are all each letter has been bracketed. Each of the comments in each letter are numbered. And following each letter, there's corresponding responses to each of those comments in each letter. So that's what you have in front of you. And there's also a table that summarizes the oral comments from the meeting and also provides responses to those oral comments. The final chapter is the overview of any kind of edits or modifications that were made to the content of the draft EIR. Some of the key modifications that you'll see are clarifications about the annexation process for the WRF, some additions that were requested by LAFCO and San Luis Obispo County regarding policies and procedures that are regulatory in nature, some clarifications about definitions of farmland, agricultural buffers, and easements, and the Air Pollution Control District requested some edits to our mitigation measures, so that's in there as well. But the conclusion is that there was no new impacts identified as a result of the comments and no new information in the final EIR that requires recirculation of the draft EIR. So next steps this afternoon or tonight, next step is for these two commissions to make a recommendation to the City Council about certification of the final EIR. The final EIR certification and approval of the project will be done by the City Council, as stated, currently expected to occur on August 14th at the August 14th meeting. And then once the EIR is certified and the project is approved, what happens next is it allows the city to proceed with the design build process for the funding applications to be completed and to proceed with permitting and permit applications. So that's the conclusion of my presentation. And I'll turn it back over to...
Okay. Thank you. Barbara, if it's okay with you, I think I'd like to have public comment come forward, and then we can then address our questions to staff, and then we can then
our deliberation.
Then we can do start our deliberations and our comments.
Agreeable.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of speakers. I thought we were going to have more people here, so I'm going to speak. So we'll keep this a little more informal than this. But for the first speaker,
I'm sorry. Okay, well, for the first speaker, can we have Jeff Heller, please, come up? And the next speaker, Glenn Siloway.
Jeff Heller, thank you, Planning Commission. Werf CAC, the thousands of hours you've put in on this. Very impactful project. I really appreciate it, whether we agree on everything or not. It's an enormous undertaking. Planning Commission, I know all the decisions you make, someone's going to be happy and someone's going to be unhappy. I don't envy that position and responsibility as well. In terms of CEQA, I'm not a CEQA expert by any means. The main thing that I'm still just can't quite understand is why the South Bay Boulevard site is the preferred site. When you look at the impacts that moving or building a brand new plant 3 miles uphill from the existing location, along with probably one of the major runways, streets, Quintana, which I understand generates some 25% of the income sales tax from the city. I think the impact of Quintana and the city financially is going to be just a lot more than what people expect. I think tearing up the streets through there will be far more than what people expect. So just intuitively, I don't get it. If we've looked at 17 sites, that this is really the preferred site. I don't know if I'll ever understand that. The other issue with CEQA that I kind of do understand is I think you do have to have preferred locations for things. In other words, the project has to be pretty well defined. The project kind of has to be stable, like this is what we're going to do and this is where we're going to do it. But I don't think there's a preferred pipeline route yet or a preferred lift station location yet. And I think those need to be mandated by CEQA in the draft EIR. So I know about supplemental EIRs and so forth, but it seems that this is more than just a supplemental issue. The location of the lift station, the preferred pathway of that piping should be in this document, and maybe I missed it, but I couldn't find it there. The other thing is the well locations. It seems to me that there are two alternates. There isn't a preferred location for the wells. Everything I look at shows two alternates. So what is the preferred location for the wells? So that's another issue, which the impacts will be different for each of those locations, but I don't think this report addresses that. I'm not going to take a lot of time talking about this, but I would really like to see everyone on these panels step up and select no project. There are alternatives. Those 17 sites, there are still options there that need to be explored. And think about the difference of having the plant at or near its existing location now, as opposed to tearing up the town and having it 3 miles inland and uphill, continual electricity bills running all those pumps. It just makes no sense to me. Thank you all for your time. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much. Glenn?
Good afternoon, Planning Commission and Worf CAC. Like Jeff, I appreciate your work. You've been at meeting after meeting after meeting and reading enormous amounts of stuff, and I don't know if we can say enough thanks to you. I think that this EIR gives you a green light to go ahead with this project. Like Jeff, I think that there probably are better locations. I could name a couple myself. But we've been through an alternatives process that's weeded them out. And we are now to the point where we have an unlovable project with a very long 3-mile lift. And the thing about it is that it is feasible. It does meet our goals. It will recycle water. It does get the plant east of the highway, which is very important to me and I think to a lot of people, and off the beach. The other thing about it is that it has gone through an enormously long planning process. We're down to the point where you have enough technical documents and enough knowledge about it that it can be both permitted and executed. One of the things that I saw in a lot of the letters to the EIR was a request that you look at an alternative on the beach, west of the highway. I can understand wanting to do that because, as the peer review said, that's the cheapest place to go. And I don't doubt that that's true. The problem with it is that going there would require a Coastal Commission review. And in order to see what risk that involves, and really one of the things you're doing here today is balancing risks and probabilities. It's an unenviable thing that you're going to have to do with trade-offs, but you do. So I went back to history to look at the Coastal Commission process, and in the period between 2009 and 2013, this city had a plan for the plant on the beach in place and in front of the Coastal Commission in a review. That review took over 2 years, and that's from the time that it got a fully ready-to-go plan. That is a huge risk to us because that cost, that delay, is 2.5 to 3% of construction costs every year going up, interest rates on the rise, and at the end, the second risk we face is the Coastal Commission may not approve the plan. What we have heard from them repeatedly is that they don't want a plant on the beach. In case people think that the Coastal Commission has never been talked to about this, let me repeat some history. In 2013, when the Coastal Commission rejected the plant on the beach with a 13-0 vote, based on a staff report that denied the permit, would have denied the permit, some people said the Coastal Commission was not engaged in that decision. That is not true. I'm going to read you a little bit from a letter. Can I keep going here?
Please conclude, though.
Okay. Here's a letter from Mary Schallenberger, published in the Tribune December 15, 2013, regarding that Coastal Commission decision. She said, "At the time, I was frustrated that the commission was in the position of having to deny a project that should have been denied by the local government. The newly elected mayor was not to blame, but bore the brunt of my frustration because he was representing the city at the hearing. True culpability lay with the former city council majority and the city's consultants who advised the city to press ahead at great expense to all concerned with an ill-conceived project. The commission made a fully informed decision. Our staff recommended denial of the permit, and commissioners agreed, because the project as designed clearly failed to meet the requirements of the California Coastal Act and Morro Bay's local coastal program."
Okay.
That's the risk west of the highway.
Thank you very much. If you'd like to give a copy to staff to have on. If you would. Okay. Do we have any other speakers? Please come forward now. I don't have any more slips, but would anybody else like to speak to this item? Okay. Well, at this point, we'll close public comment. And I'd just like to address a couple questions that came up from public comment first. So we had a question on site selection. Do you want to give a quick review, Scott, on the process? I mean, minutes?
I think I'll refer to my to our public works director.
Okay.
Commencing in spring of 2013, we started a public process to look at alternative sites, which including review of about 17 site locations. That report has been incorporated in this environmental review by reference. So many sites were looked at through the public process. We settled on a couple of sites to do further analysis and design upon. Both were in the Highway 41 corridor and were determined to be unacceptable through public input and city council. And that's what led us to the South Bay Boulevard site as the council selected preferred option.
Okay, Rob, thanks. Do we have to have the lift stations and the pipelines specified, or can there be alternates on that? That was another question for the CEQA.
I'm going to defer to the CEQA experts on this. Maybe Jennifer can help us with that. They were identified and their locations.
So there's two lift station alternatives that are identified, and they were evaluated fully and equally, so that it gives the city the flexibility to choose either one without having to do additional analysis for the lift station. And the same goes for the wells. So there was two injection well field areas. One or the other will be chosen. And the impacts for both were evaluated so that the city, again, has the flexibility to choose one or the other without having to do additional CEQA.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I got a question for staff. Why was your baseline on the CIR considering Cayucas with Morro Bay at the same time when we know that Cayucas is going to be building their own plant? It's to you, Rob.
I thought you said Scott.
No. Yeah, you did.
No. Okay. Well, to you, Rob.
Okay. The project evaluated the impacts of the EIR evaluated the impacts of the new project to the environment. the in reference to your earlier question on H2S and odors, the response in the EIR was to, it was addressed in the air quality section, which talked about the facilities would be designed to mitigate odor control. So that's part of the design.
Yeah, but the problem that you have is by having your baseline with Cayucas is sewage that's coming down Main Street, and the H2S that's off-gassing there is going away when they build their new plant. So when you put in a new lift station, you can't mitigate that. That becomes a class one impact. It's unmitigatable. And that's why I have an issue with this baseline. And also, I have an issue with the capacity with the baseline.
I disagree that the project is completely mitigable by design and construction. We're going to design it so not so that H2S will not cause an issue.
H2S is inherent in any lift station and force main infrastructure, so you can't say you're going to design it away. It's inherently in that process.
There will be chemical addition and odor scrubbers to deal with.
You still won't get rid of the H2S. We had that at Lift Station 5 in Cayucas. That issue, what I'm getting at, is a Class 1 impact. And you making it sound like you can mitigate it away. Because that's the problem is your baseline. You should have had a baseline that had the project, the no alternative project. It's just Morro Bay sewage because Cayucas is leaving.
The EIR did evaluate only Morro Bay.
Well, she just told us that when they evaluated the EIR, they considered it with Morro Bay and Cayucas because that's the existing what we have existing right now.
Maybe Jennifer can clarify.
I guess when you're talking about the existing lift station with an existing condition that is going to be changed because of the Cayucas project?
Correct.
And so I would assume that would have been evaluated perhaps in their EIR. I don't know offhand. I mean,
That's in the city of Morro Bay. It's in the city limits. To be clear, so, maybe you don't.
So the lift station is if the the baseline conditions today are what are described in the EIR,
right?
And then if you're going to decommission the plant, that is evaluated as well in the EIR.
That's separate. The decommissioning of the plant is one thing. What we're saying is that because Cayucas is building their own plant, that infrastructure is going away. That H2S condition becomes zero.
So the condition
now is, you are putting in a new lift station and pumping it 3 miles in, you're creating a class one impact because of you're creating an H2S situation. That's my point is your baseline is questionable. Do you understand? Because of Cayucas leaving, how that shifts the baseline?
Richard, let me see. Jennifer, let me take a shot and see if I can try to clarify so that all the board members understand what staff is explaining. So I'm going to make a stab at that. The issue, as I'm understanding it, that the WRFCAC member is raising is a concern about impacts that are going to result from the lift station that's proposed weren't sufficiently analyzed. And that's just not true. The EIR analyzes all of the impacts that are going to result from all of the different alternatives that are suggested, either the lift station, the project area, the different pipelines. All of those impacts have been analyzed, and it has concluded that there weren't any significant impacts that couldn't be unmitigated except for the cultural resource issue. The issue of what the baseline is irrelevant to the issue of determining whether or not the impacts that were analyzed were sufficiently analyzed and those impacts were found to be not significant.
Okay, so if you are telling me that the baseline is irrelevant, right, then how are you mitigating something that's irrelevant? Where's your baseline point? See, I don't think you understand.
No, you don't understand. The issue is that...
Excuse me?
You don't understand. I'm trying to explain to you because you don't understand. So let me give it one more shot. There's impacts that are resulting from the different aspects of the project.
Right.
Those impacts have been analyzed. The impacts have been determined what those impacts are. The impacts have then been mitigated. And as a result of that analysis and that mitigation, there's no significant impact from the lift station, from the pipelines, odor-wise.
I'm not talking about odor-wise. We're talking about H2S gas, a greenhouse gas issue. By not recognizing the baseline being... When you're recognizing the baseline as being with Cayucas leaving, that baseline changes. And so, therefore, your situation and mitigation changes. I don't think you understand.
Okay,
the
Richard, I think you've asked your question. It's been answered, according to them. Let me follow up on that for you real quickly. Rob, How is the hydrogen sulfide gas mitigated in the new lift station? Do you have the techniques involved?
As Rob mentioned, the any fugitive gases from the lift station would be collected and would be treated before they would be discharged to remove the H2S.
Okay, so. Essentially, it doesn't matter what the baseline was. We're going to be mitigating any off-gassing from the new and proposed lift stations, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I think this...
So you're telling me that you're building a lift station and a force main, and you're not going to have a blow-off valve or anything like that. Everything is going to go into a collector, a scrubber, and you're going to eliminate that gas completely?
There would be at the point of at the main lift station located wherever that might be located, for example, near the existing wastewater treatment plant site, that main lift station. Again, the fugitive gases from there would be collected and would be treated before they're discharged. And then also the next point where those gases would be discharged would be at the headworks of the new facility at the South Bay Boulevard site. And again, the open water surfaces at that location where that force main is discharging, those areas would be covered and forced air ventilation will be used to take the off gassing from there, and that will be sent through a scrubber as well for that H2S to be removed.
Okay, so then why aren't you using a baseline without Cayucas then?
Richard, I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think it's even relevant at this point. If the gases are mitigated at the proposed sites, it really doesn't matter what the baseline says.
Mr. Chair, if I may just add something, maybe the issue is, or the concern is that, I'm going to try to say that in words that I can understand. So if there's gases of certain amount that are currently being expelled and released, if the concern is that what the city has done is they've used that number, and anything over that number is what is being mitigated. If that's what the concern is, that's not what the EIR did. Yeah. So the EIR mm-hmm. analyzed the gases that could come from the lift station and the pipeline, and it is determined that those are being mitigated by the project design.
Okay. Okay, then let me ask you another question. How are you calculating your baseline capacity without Cayucas? Because we've been told at WharfCAC that you're not addressing exfiltration, but you're addressing inflow and infiltration. So I didn't see in this EIR how INI from Cayucas has affected the capacity issues in the current site.
So the EIR is based on a project size that only includes the Morro Bay flows. So the actual treatment plant that's being considered is only sized for the Morro Bay flows. And the flows that were used to develop the sizing of that treatment plant, that was based on information that was evaluated in the draft facilities master plan and was confirmed with the additional flow monitoring work that was done back in 2017. And that information is also in the One Water Plan. And so the way that Cayucos is being excluded from the analysis is there's actual real analytical in the field data that's being used to come up with those flows. Those are meters that were either installed by VNA or the city's existing gray line meters that they have in the collection system now.
Okay, I appreciate what you're saying.
Okay, Richard, I think you've had your say. Let's allow somebody else to speak. So, Barbara, how do you want to do this? You want to do one member each and then go around, or?
I'd say we could just start anywhere and go
okay.
around, whatever you're convenient
okay.
with.
Steve, you have questions. And let's please keep this to questions, and then we'll go to comments.
Oh, it is. And actually, I know little about EIRs. I'm not an expert. I'm not even a novice. So whether this is a great EIR or whether it's shoddy, I would not know. I only have two questions, and hopefully they could be answered in under 2 minutes. The first one was, there was a LAFCO letter that basically stated they led to the fact that they felt like it might not be good enough to be the document for the annexation process. And I saw the comments or the responses back to them, and I wasn't sure if that clarified it. Has staff actually spoke to LAFCO since then, and do you feel your revisions made it acceptable for them to accept this as the environmental document for the annexation? I guess that's to you, Scott.
So,
am I being clear?
Yes.
Okay, good.
John Rickenbach, who's on this project, did have a conversation with LAFCO,
oh.
and I believe we've addressed their EIR comments to their concern. In fact, we have another clarifying statement that will regarding the sphere of influence, that the sphere of influence application will be made for the 396 acres.
I just don't want to come back 6 months later and have to hire a new consultant to do another EIR. That's my only concern.
We don't believe so.
Oh, okay. Good deal. And the second one is, I saw in some of this some letters from PERC and about a plant, and they threw some numbers out there, and I just want to recollect for myself, we went down to Fillmore in Santa Paula. Wasn't it PERC that did the Santa Paula plant?
That's correct.
And didn't the city have to buy back the plant and basically take it back over after the fact, and there was a grand jury? They weren't treating it well enough, as I remember in talking with the people there. Is that correct?
I don't remember all the details, but that's the gist of the conversation that I remember.
Okay, I was just wondering, because I remember their name has come up in the past over this whole process, and their numbers look fantastic, but at the end of the day, if it didn't fill the needs, then I have some concern with
the primary need for the purchase back from PERC was to save financing money. They could get a better interest rate from another entity rather than using PERC had some fairly high interest rates. So I think they, even though they purchased it for higher than what they originally paid for it, they will end up over the lifetime saving something like $30 million on the project.
Oh, okay. And that's all the questions.
Okay, thank you. Joseph?
Yeah, likewise, I am about as far as one can get from being an expert or a novice on environmental impact reports. And nevertheless, and I realize that we're here not to relitigate all the possible alternatives, but really to focus on the environmental impacts of the proposed site and decide whether they're significant and what the appropriate mitigations are. But I'm also aware that this may be one of the last opportunities in a larger sense to talk about the feasibility and the effect that the the proposed plan will have on the community. And I think, and I was glad to see in the report, I am going to get to a question. I was glad,
please.
I was glad to see in the report that they took the time to sort of narrate the events that led up to the selection of this site and the considerations for some of the other things that were rejected. Okay. So, is it true, let's see, we're contemplating replacing the plant because at times it exceeds what one government agency or another has by mandate. It doesn't do a sufficiently good job all the time of pushing water out into the ocean that's sufficiently clean. And that water ultimately going into the ocean is a function of both Morro Bay and Cayucos' waste. And without Cayucos participating in the system in a year or so, it still will always be above the minimum pure water standards that are in place. I realize I'm not doing a terribly good job of asking the question, but do you have any idea? Do you have a sense of what I'm asking? This is for Jennifer, I believe, or maybe not. Whoever can answer that.
Okay, we're going to toss a coin. I think Eric won.
I think in generally, I think what you're saying is correct. Essentially, the facility was never designed to meet the standards that it needs to meet now based on the new permit, which is 30 milligrams per liter for BOD and TSS both. The facility was designed to treat to a 120/70 standard, which was consistent with the 301H waiver that the city had. So we can, that's one thing to consider. One, the facility was never designed to meet the level of treatment that it needs to meet now. And then number two, the facility has a physical limitation of being able to handle more than 1 million gallons per day through the secondary treatment process, which is another condition of the city's new permit. So even if you were to exclude the flows from Cayucos and just look at the Morro Bay flows, there are times during both wet weather and dry weather conditions that flows exceed 1 million gallons per day. So during those scenarios, when flows would exceed 1 million gallons per day with the existing facility, you would have to bypass some of that flow around secondary treatment, and that would be a potential violation of the city's permit.
Okay, very good. Next question. The report cites the decision of the California Coastal Commission as one of the considerations in rejecting alternative one. So a basic question, why is that relevant? Why is in assessing environmental impact, what makes a past decision of the California Coastal Commission even relevant? And I guess that would be, again, I don't know to whom this is directed.
So, I mean, I think what makes it relevant is the conversation that's circled around in trying to place the plant back in its current location. The California Coastal Commission is a resource agency that's responsible for review of coastal development permits, and this is a major infrastructure project and would have appeal authority over it no matter where we put it, inside the city, outside the city, as long as it's in the coastal zone. So placing it in areas where there are hazards present is a problem, and they've clearly outlined that issue to the city. So it's relevant because they're a permitting agency that would have oversight over a portion of the permitting for the project.
But clearly, yes. But it doesn't have any relevance in terms of assessing the impact of the Tri-W site. It goes. It's only relevant to the extent that it was a reason behind rejecting the first alternative. But it has no relevance with respect to evaluating the proposal before us.
Part of the context.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
I have one more question, and this will be, if I can figure out what it is. I'll defer.
Okay.
I'll defer.
We'll come back around if we have time. Valerie, did you have questions?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. Then, Michael, do you have questions?
I guess the first question is about the growth capacity. We all see the changing regulation base in terms of homes. We see what California is doing in terms of energy. I would say it's a natural assumption that we're going to see a dramatic drop in consumption, both based on the cost of this facility as it plays out, as well as the fact that technology is going to be driven by codes to have less water consumption. We're not assuming, though, that that is what's going to allow for the build-out. Is there an assumption that the build-out of the town is a combination of gradual line replacement and loss of effluent leak and things like that, technology? I guess what I'm saying is, where is the growth capacity for the town to build out coming from if this is based on current use baselines now and we're not growing the system? You know, as we look at we just had the One Water thing that our group looked at a few weeks ago. So when we look at consumption, unless we have those types of things, the right of a person to build an accessory dwelling unit, the right of people to build out within higher density areas, potentially could be impacted. Is that correct? If we don't have some kind of gradation of larger consumption savings, does that make sense? I'm trying to see how we have any kind of future growth based on baselines without some kind of assumption in there about technology or code conservation.
Michael, are you asking how the capacity was chosen?
How the ultimate capacity is rationalized toward the build-out of the town, which was part of the assumptions going in.
I mean, the growth analysis in the EIR is based on general plan assumptions and build-out expectations, planning in accordance with the urban water management planning efforts that occur every 5 years. So those are the documents that go into the analysis of projected growth for the community. So that's based on the community's own plans for build out. And then, I mean, you can speak to the capacity planning for the facility itself based on that as well.
I think that answers the question pretty well, but the general plan, information from the general plan was used to determine what the build out scenario would look like in future and current and future capacity needs, what those would look like. To speak a little bit to water usage, that's something that was looked at as part of the One Water Plan. The city and the state has experienced kind of record low water usage and wastewater generation, and so that was taken into consideration in development of the future flow. So what would the future flows look like? What is future water consumption going to look like? And so that's been taken into account in the development of the capacity.
And you'll also recall that the Planning Commission reviewed the baseline assessment for the general plan update, LCP update, and it had that background information in there related to growth. And then also you reviewed the draft land use plan for the general plan, and so that identifies land uses, and then you have infrastructure use that goes along with that and projects out what's needed over time, and then establish what the population would be. And we still don't get to the year 2040 at the extent, which is the lifetime of the current general plan document, the draft that we're working on now. We still don't get to that 12,200 person limit that's identified in Measure H. So that's where you've seen that before, and that's what this sort of tiered off of.
Okay. And the only other question I had is the feasibility of alternate sites really was controlled by the council decisions of past review, site plan reviews, alternate site reviews. If the council rendered a site infeasible, then it doesn't become available for environmental evaluation.
Well, we did the analysis and reported back several different times to the council on a review of the alternative sites, and this the proposed preferred site is the one that came out of that vetting process.
Okay, that's all.
Paul, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I wanted to follow up a little bit about the pipeline routing. the pipeline that delivers the raw wastewater from the new, from the old plant to the new plant. The only really alignment shown in the exhibits in here is the one that's considered the west alignment. So my question is, in following up on what was asked, is that the preferred alignment for the raw wastewater? Is that westerly alignment?
That's a preferred alignment.
Okay, because I didn't find anywhere where it was designated as the preferred alignment, and the only other alternative to that one is the one that was dismissed that would run up Embarcadero and up Pacific. The concern I have on that alignment, I don't know if you read the letter here from the Northern Chumash, that's where the hot cultural resources are on that side of the highway, on the west side. Without any other alternative for that raw water pipeline, I think you found the worst possible alignment for it. And I don't see the other alternative already being dismissed. You really don't have an alternative for that raw wastewater line. I don't see where it would go other than this location, which is going to disturb all your cultural resources. The Northern Chumash, I think, is going to, they might dig their heels in on this one. And this has got to go through a long process. Valerie knows all about this. You got to go through your advisory council back in Washington. You have to get with your state historic preservation office. You have to get all these clearances before any work starts on any of the project, the whole, including the wastewater treatment plant. So it seems to me that the document's lacking on the alternatives for the pipelines in particular. It seems as though that the lift stations, too, didn't really specify any preferred one, but it looks as though they're leaning towards 1A near the old plant. The alternatives in there, again, in the flood hazard zones and also in where the cultural resources are the most prominent are in that same location. So you have two different things, not preferred on either one of them, with very little alternatives to go anywhere else. One other thing, is something that was brought up at our last joint meeting last week, it was something that came out of the Blue Ribbon Commission, and it mentioned in there about projects that are integral to the new treatment plant, and at that time Scott Collins said they would be done separately. It's my understanding that as far as what CEQA defines a project, it's the whole of the action, that anything that it touches, anything that needs to be moved because of this project, otherwise it would not be moved, now becomes something that's part of the project description. I heard rumors that the water line in the bike path, that the raw wastewater line wants to go down, may be relocated to accommodate that line. Guess what? That becomes part of the project now because you're touching it. It's got to have some place to, it needs an alternative to go. So it seems like the document has piecemealed some stuff, not included everything in it, and it seems like it's lacking on some of the alternatives it needs on conveyances. Those are my concerns.
Thanks, Paul. Do you have, would somebody like to address the alternative locations of the pipelines and lift stations? Is that going to be a concern on the CEQA document if they have to be moved?
I think I can address the piecemeal aspect. And again, I'm not a CEQA expert, but. Based on the way that the CEQA document's been put together, it does include all components of the project. It includes the off-site components, the on-site components, any of the recycled water components that are being addressed. I don't recall the water line discussion and the need to potentially move a water line as a result of the pipeline alignment. And there's going to be things during construction that are going to need to change. You know, there could be different things that come up that weren't necessarily specifically identified in the environmental document, but I don't think that that's any reason to make the CEQA document invalid.
Okay, thanks.
Right now, it looks as though your only place to go for your raw wastewater line is in that bike path alignment, the west side. What happens if you dig up something like an ancient burial? What's that going to do to the project? I mean, the first choice is to avoid, and here it is right in your path. You won't know until you dig down. Believe me, I know from experience that on the surface you may not see much. In a couple hundred years, it's been covered by floods. But there's one site out there that dates back 9,000 years. And the minute you dig down with that excavator, you're going to find it. So what happens in that only route that you've selected, you find a burial.
Yes. Question is, can we run an alternate pipeline or an alternate route if something comes up during the construction process?
So, or was the question, what happens if we encounter cultural resources during the course of construction?
So there's mitigation. There's mitigation. I mean, I think you're suggesting there'll be a delay in the project, which, you know, the mitigation measures specify what steps you'll need to take if you do find something. There's treatment plans, recovery plans, curation, things of that sort, and there's steps that will need to be followed in the event that that happens. I guess the secondary question around if you move the project alignment, I mean, it's a complex project. If, in fact, the footprint of the project changes relative to what's in the EIR, then there will be a requirement for subsequent analysis to be done in accordance with CEQA and some decisions to be made whether any additional documentation would be required at that time.
In my experience, when we did the Chorro Valley Pipeline, that we were asked by the local tribes that if we did encounter something like that, we'd be ready to have a place to reinter. If it's multiple barrier, it comes under the Native Graves Act and it becomes an automatic historic place. And I know what it's like when we uncovered something during construction and we had a powwow out there that you cannot believe behind the men's colony, and it was just a mortar bowl in the bedrock is all we found. And I thought, you know, it caused a huge delay to the project. We're paying delay claims on the contractor for not going anywhere. We didn't have another choice until it was resolved. Mm-hmm. It took a long time to get over that issue.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
One thing that struck me in regards to the mitigation measures and that's developed for cultural resources for this project is very similar to what was developed for the Los Osos project, and what they develop is called a programmatic agreement. But it's, in fact, I was thinking, did you just use that and put it in here? But it's very, very comprehensive, that, and it does touch on all aspects, whether it's prior to construction or during construction and post-construction type activities. So I feel in a lot of ways it's very thorough, and the city has done due diligence in regards to taking cultural resources into consideration. One of the things I was wondering about.
Valerie, we were still into questions.
Okay.
I'm
so
sorry.
We'll
come back around. Jesse?
I do have one question. So I saw that Applied Earthworks is going to be the cultural advisor on this. Is that correct? Anybody? Or has that not been established? Well, I guess my specific question was, for archaeological resources, are the tribes represented? Are they going to have observer type of rights, or are they going to be able to observe?
Yeah, there's culturally affiliated monitoring requirements, correct?
Okay. Barbara, Douglas, did you?
Thank you. The Sierra Club, you know, originally has been very interested in the lift station, and I'm looking at the responses to their letter, and they're talking about pump redundancy, and the response, it looks like it just talks about raising the backup generator a couple feet. In the draft environmental impact report, it shows a diesel tank there too. And I'm just thinking about, you know, Fukushima Daiichi, where it just wiped out their backup and it created a catastrophe. So I'd just like to have you address that. You know, why is it only 2 feet up off the base flood level? And what happens, you know, if that thing gets saturated?
Okay. Eric or Rob, I think you're the engineers. As far as the lift station design for an inundation?
So the requirement per our flood damage prevention regulations is 2 feet above the base flood elevation is what it exceeds FEMA's requirements. So that's the reason it's 2 feet above. We've done some in associated with the previous project, some most probable wave height due to tsunami. It's not the 70-foot tall standing wave that runs ashore there. It was something like 2.5 feet above the ground surface elevation at the existing site. So we feel that the mitigation measures of raising the electrical components, mechanical components, or floodproofing to 2 feet above the base flood elevation is appropriate in this location.
Rob, also, does that include critical infrastructure like the like tankage and fuel supplies?
With tankage and fuel supplies, either it'll have to be raised above or strapped down so that it doesn't float away. Diesel is one of the options for fueling there. May not be end up being the option. Propane is another option that we could use there also.
We also have natural gas there also.
Yes, but I wouldn't rely upon natural gas for emergency generation.
Okay. Did you have another question, Paul? Okay. Barbara?
There's been a request from the audience to maybe for everyone to speak up into their microphones a little bit so
okay.
that it can be heard.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll try.
You can stay there, Jen. Okay, so I'll speak up. I have a very general question on the CEQA, and after reviewing this, I thought it was very thorough in the responses, and it appeared to, from a non-engineer, you know, mitigate most of this. But my question is, you being in the professional field, how does this compare to other projects and similar local agencies? When I see we have like 35 responses, and a lot of the questions were focused on alternative sites and cost evaluation. Is this typical what you would expect to see, or is there a lot more concern in this community? Just in general, can you comment on that?
I think it's typical based on the complexity of the project and the history of the project. So I would say it's was what was expected as a response.
Okay.
Yes.
And then all the questions at the end and responses, that would be incorporated into the final EIR, or the draft EIR would be updated to include all those changes. And then will another document be submitted for review, or how does that work?
It's up to the city to decide how to package that. At this point, we're considering that final EIR together with the draft EIR. That's the package that is the final EIR. We don't have a plan yet to reprint the draft, but again, that's up to the city to decide how to do that.
Assuming all these changes were acceptable.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks. Are the detention basins at the plant that retain any overflow? Are they going to be lined? I didn't see any mention in clay lining or lining for any of the retention basins.
Are you talking about stormwater detention?
I'm talking about overflow, and they talked about tankage overflow and inundation or excess stormwater, and if there was any overflow from the plant to the Chorro Creek and the estuary.
Oh, detentions for overflow.
Yes,
okay.
At the plant.
Raw sewage overflows at the plant.
Yeah.
Typically, they would not be lined. They would be unlined basins there. We still haven't design is not complete with the project. So we are using the design build process. This is a preliminary document. So we will need to assess soil conditions and see if we need them to be lined.
Okay. So if they're So if they're not lined, would that require excavation and
hauling off all the dirt if there is a spill?
I don't believe so. It would be contained on the treatment plant site, and it's really the last line of defense. Mm-hmm. It's not a routine operation. The first line of defense is to not allow it to spill. The facility is served all by pumps, so there are other things that we can do besides allowing it to spill.
Okay. So let me get back to, I was involved in the first EIR for the plant, for the remodel of the plant down on where it exists now. And my question on that is, what if we do not approve this plant or this process and miss our timelines? What are the fines that we're becoming liable for from the Water Quality Control Board?
So the city just received the time schedule order from the regional board June 27th, that identified that the city needs to be in compliance with their new permit by February 28th, 2023. So under the current plan, right now the facility would be substantially completed at the end of 2021, with ongoing commissioning and testing and startup going on into the first part of 2022. Potentially, if the city does not meet the requirements of the time schedule order, I believe that the fine amounts are $11,000 per day, I believe, is what the regional board could assess against the facility, against the city. And then those also have some timelines associated with them that would actually go back in time. I believe back to 2014.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I think we've got time for one quick round of questions.
I want to catch you up on the return.
So let's have one quick round on questions. You good, Steve? Joseph, do you have another question?
Those fines we just talked about, they're discretionary with the board, though, correct?
Minimum mandatory penalties if we don't meet discharge requirements. Those are minimum mandatory. The board has no discretion on levying those fines.
Could you characterize in some fashion the percentage of each? Just if you can. If not, I'm trying to get a feel for what would be discretionary and what would not be.
We believe it's about $3,000 per occurrence of a violation is the non-discretionary fine.
And occurrence is a day?
Every day is a new occurrence.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Valerie, do you have any further questions? Okay. We'll go around for comment.
I have a quick clarification quickly. Thanks, Joe. This is from an email that was recently received, or some clarification that was received from Harvey Packard from the regional board, and I'll just summarize here quickly. Let's see. Certain violations in the MPDS permit trigger mandatory penalties of at least $3,000 per violation. So just to summarize, mandatory penalties would be about $15,000 per month. However, the Water Board has the discretion to increase the penalty on each violation up to $10,000, which could cost the city up to about $50,000 per month. The penalty for violating the settlement agreement is not mandatory, so that's going back to the 2014 date I mentioned before, but within the discretion of the board. So the minimum of zero or a maximum of $1,000 per day could be assessed. And then the penalty for violating the time schedule order, which is what I mentioned before as well, is the maximum penalty for that is $5,000 per day. So there's a number of different penalties that are either mandatory or discretionary in different time periods.
Okay. Thank you. Michael, do you? Okay. Paul, do you have any other further questions?
Yeah, just one question. On the Class 1 impacts, does the city have to make findings for those Class 1 impacts?
That's a good question.
Yes, the city will have to make findings and pass a statement of overriding consideration for the those impacts.
Okay. Just real quick, one last thing, because you just brought this up. On the times schedule order, that you said it could be, could come up to $5,000 a day. According to this, a certification of the final EIR was supposed to be done on June 30th. Are we already in violation?
Yes, they can go back in time if we don't meet the end date.
Okay. Jesse, do you have any further questions? Douglas? Barbara? Do you have any further questions, Richard?
Just a comment.
Okay, we'll get around to comments. Okay, let me see if I got any. Okay, this is Ken. You know, I'm a little bit worried about the water reinjection and our well sites from the injection to our pickup sites. Can we create a basin control regulation or plan so that we can eliminate anybody else from dropping a straw into that aquifer? And can we also to pick up between our injection and our pickup site? And can we also do a basin management plan for the whole Morro Basin so that we have some control on our groundwater, and seeing as this is going to be our future water source?
So ordinance, the injection sites are within the city limits. Our wells are within the city limits. We have a city ordinance that does not allow private wells. So unless approved by city council. City council could approve somebody putting a well in the ground. But at this point in time, I don't see where we would recommend the city council to do that.
Okay, Rob, do we have... I thought we had a discharge well from the Culligan plant, and I thought we had a pickup well from the power plant. Are those still in effect?
The power plant wells are in the Morro Bay Mutual Water Company's authority, which was formed prior to city incorporation. So they have two wells that provide makeup water for their boilers. I doubt if they'll run those boilers ever again. I think all the equipment has been gutted from the power plant and to provide fire protection water.
But if it's sold, somebody still have access to those wells.
We have the ordinance plus only one of them is currently permitted because Coastal appealed the well. And Dynergy withdrew their application for it. I think it would be a difficult time for the new owner to use those wells. The new owner will have to go through land use permitting through the city of Morro Bay. We have a little bit of authority to act on what they do on that property.
Okay. And then are there any discharge wells, you know, in the basin?
There are throughout the city. There are dry wells that folks have used for stormwater control. One of them is on the Culligan property. It's not for their process water, but for runoff from the parking lot. So it's a small stormwater basin. So it. In fact, I'm not even sure that the Culligan overlies the aquifer at that point, being on the other side of Willow Camp Creek there.
Okay. So you don't see any other issues that I've missed that
as far as the groundwater basin and the injection and the pickup wells.
The configuration of the Morrow aquifer, Morrow Creek aquifer, there's a spot called the Narrows right about Miners. And the aquifer drops at that point. Downstream of that location, we're the only ones that really can extract water from it. There are two wells on the high school property that actually were drilled by the city of Morro Bay, and we operate those wells for the benefit of the high school. So we turn them off and on for their use. But the city controls, with the exception of the two Morro Bay Mutual Water Company wells, all the wells downstream in the Narrows.
Okay. Well, thank you. Okay, I think we can go through as far as do a short comment period, and I think we've got about...
This will take a minute.
Okay, I think we've got about 20 minutes to...
For me right now, this has been a long, hard process. Is this plant in the best location we could have? No, it isn't. It's the best compromise over the period of time that we've gone through, and it seemed one of the only sites that everybody could somewhat agree on back in the past. And for that reason, I do not feel trying to hold the project hostage by not recommending adoption at this point in time. So that's all I have to say.
Okay, great. Thank you. Joseph?
Yeah, I'm primarily in agreement with that last statement. As much as I would like the site for the water reclamation facility to be elsewhere, given my level of familiarity with these kind of documents and just kind of a common sense approach, this document seems reasonable and comprehensive, and the conclusions that they reach seem to me to be correct. And I don't think that we should use this as an opportunity to relitigate possible alternative sites, although maybe opportunities are still available in the future. There are a couple of small points when I was reading the document that don't really affect its ultimate conclusion. So, there is one. Because there's a safety issue with that. In the part dealing with transportation, and I believe the document said that there were no significant impacts with respect to transportation during the course of constructing the plant. Intuitively, at the site of Quintana and Los Osos Boulevard, if there's a lot of heavy, large truck traffic there in the course of taking it up to the site and coming away, that, in addition to the relative unsafety of that particular intersection, intuitively, I disputed that conclusion. And I'd like to state that for the record, or have somebody address it, or allay my concerns. But that's a tough intersection, and there's going to be a lot of trucks moving through it, and it doesn't strike me as safe without something being done to improve that situation. But other than that, nothing else I would say will really merit discussion.
Okay. Hillary?
My comments are in regard to the ESA's preparation of the final EIR.
Could you move your microphone a little bit closer so people can hear? Thank you.
I felt that ESA was receptive to the commenters, and they pointed the commenters to specific areas in the draft EIR where particular issues were previously addressed. In other instances, comments were incorporated into the final EIR, and sections were modified along with wholesale adoption of guidelines, policies, and procedures provided by reviewing agencies such as the APCD, the County of SLO, and the California Coastal Commission. ESA clarified numerous times why something was less significant in regard to impacts, largely because measures were incorporated into the project description and design. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Michael?
Like Commissioner Luer, I was here at the creation of this project back when it was a fix-up the existing plant back almost last century.
Yeah.
The engineers didn't look at the floodplain. The second version of that ended up being an acropolis of a two-story sewer plant overlooking what is one of our great unused assets, which is our beach block, the only one we have left that hasn't been substantially developed. The letter I wrote that's in the final EIR is trying to accentuate the benefits of moving off the site, and I'm convinced that any site off the beach block is the best site. I think there are other environmentally preferable sites, but they've been taken off the table. There may be other alternative technologies that we haven't been able to take a look at. But the piece that's here, I think, acknowledges we have issues with the people of the past, we have issues with the people of the present, but we have only opportunities for the people that are more obeyed citizens in the future. And I think those all have to come into play. There is not much we can do to mitigate the issues with the Chumash, aside from the types of agreements that are in place. I watched what happened in Los Osos as they built the sewer there, where my family also lives. I think it's critical that we not look at this with a small lens. We have to look at it with the largest lens. When the government changed the nature of the channel coming into the bay, that was a significant impact on the city. It allowed us to have fishing like no one could have imagined. When the power plant was built, it was a significant issue. Nobody necessarily saw the impact. They thought they built it out of town. It ends up being in the middle of town. The initial writings of the initial surveyors come through here describe North Morro Bay as wastelands waiting to be developed. And I think we've come a long way over time, understanding that the environment is our best asset to try to take care of. That block is absolutely special. We have ways that we can mitigate cost in an equitable, ethical way across our generations that are going to be paying for this. And so I'm ready to go forward with this.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Paul, any comment? Jesse, any comment?
Yeah, I have some comments. So a lot of people have expressed that, you know, this may be not the best site, but it is the site. And I think that's important to note going forward. We just got to keep pressing forward with the project as it is at this point. A lot of effort, a lot of good people have been working very hard on this, and I want to appreciate those people. I appreciate staff's time. I appreciate the public's time. I appreciate everybody's time. And looking forward towards the future, I do want to state for the record that although significant and unavoidable, any burial remains must be treated with the utmost respect. And that's it.
Douglas?
Just in reading through the correspondence from the Coastal Commission in the last couple of years, what I really like is that we are addressing their key concern about coastal hazard issues. This is the primary reason why they denied the plant where it is now. And they've indicated a willingness to continue to work with us on sites not west of the freeway. So I'm in favor of this.
Okay. Richard, do you have any comments?
You know, if we step back and ask ourselves why we're doing this project, and if you take into account sea level rise, climate change, Those kind of things have multivariables. After all these years on being on Wharf Gack, we've kind of like slivered it down, took in all those concerns and slivered it down to like 180-foot tsunami. And as a wastewater collection system expert and who's built, was involved working with Coastal in Cayucas on a lift station on the beach there. If we're to address climate change and sea level rise in a holistic manner, we should avoid building any lift stations near the coast. They pose a higher public health risk than what is existing there. I think this EIR is grossly grossly incomplete. There's class one impacts regarding capacity, regarding other issues there that need to be addressed. And I feel that also the alternatives that there was a Hansen's alternative that was never been evaluated and never discussed. And I think that we need a plan B.
Barbara?
Thank you. Yes, I agree with my colleague, Mr. Shively, in support of this project. And I did want to mention, since like Richard and several of others, I have been on this committee for 3.5 years and was also fortunate enough or lucky enough to be asked to serve on the Blue Ribbon Commission. But I've heard from citizens in that that they want us to demonstrate some leadership and listening better. And I can assert that everybody I've worked with has been listening. We haven't always agreed on everything, but we listen very carefully, and the Blue Ribbon Commission's job was to really look at those rates and challenge every single assumption and line item in the cost, which I think the gentleman to my left can assert that we did. And so when I look at leadership, I look at sometimes making some very difficult decisions that but also knowing when to challenge, which I believe most of us have, and also when to support these decisions and move together as the community that we need to do right now. So I'm in support of approving this EIR as is. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Barbara. Okay, as I've mentioned before, with Michael Lucas, we were sitting on the first go-around of this process. And when I got that EIR, I had over 40 pages of notes on items on there that were fallacious, were just plain, you know, pie in the sky, and others that were just plain made up. Going through the draft EIR and the final EIR, I came up with about one page. So the process is, from what I've seen, has been totally different. We've, in my experience in talking to the Coastal Commission, they're, from what they've conveyed to me through the years and then also, you know, in other communications, is that they would not allow anything west of Highway 1. They just flat-ass wouldn't allow it. And anybody that thinks they would is living in their own world. So whatever has been said out there, whatever has been promised, you know, you've got to accept the facts at some point. So there's issues with the placement of the site. There's some other items that I would like to see. You know, but what we also have is what Michael spoke more eloquently than I can, is that by moving where the plan is now, we open up a tremendous possibility for redevelopment and financial recapture of the opportunity that's there that we could basically give a gift to our children and the future of Morro Bay. So what I would like to see is any of that opportunity and any of that revenue that is captured from redevelopment of that site, from a master plan, that is then applied to the wastewater treatment plant and to buy down the bill that the city is paying for its plant. And we also have, this is our best opportunity to get, you know, potable reuse. We've got, you know, we're looking at drought, we're looking at climate change, and this is our opportunity to address that so we get a viable, sustainable future for our water supply. And other than that, I don't see how we can do it. We can't rely on state water. They've already cut us off before. So I think I've got a couple other issues that I'll give to staff, you know, afterwards. But I think it's time for a motion. So Scott or powers that be, how would you like us to make a motion, a second?
We would need a motion and a second from each board independently, and then a vote.
Okay. Barbara, would you like to?
Yes, I would like to make a motion that our board recommend adoption and certification of the final environmental impact report, incorporating all the changes discussed and included in the appendix today for the water reclamation facility, and make that recommendation to City Council.
I second that.
Why don't you go ahead and complete your process, and then we'll go through ours.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
I'm on the board.
No.
Okay. So to clarify, we have 1, 2, 3, 4 approving, and two oppositions, Paul Donnelly and Richard Sadowski. Motion carries.
Okay. Do I have a motion for the Planning Commission?
I move we recommend certification.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? Okay. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passes 4-1.
I have a correction. My apologies to Jesse. You're on both teams. How did you vote on ours? I didn't. Okay, so it's not 4-2, it is 5-2 for the Water Reclamation Citizens Advisory.
Okay. Okay, any closing comments that anybody would like to make?
I would. Recently, the California legislature is addressing what they call environmental justice. And also, in concurrence with that, the California Ocean Protection Council is updating their sea level rise guidance document, and that's going through a legislative process. One of the things that I would highly recommend, that's what I think that we could be doing here, is very similar to what happened in New York in Hurricane Sandy, and they created a wastewater resiliency plan, and that is something that I think would make the most sense right now until Cayucas leaves. It would be a good faith movement toward regional board and the Coastal Commission if we look into doing a wastewater resiliency plan, which basically waterproofs certain aspects of the buildings. And then I would also would like to see if this joint board would be willing to have a meeting and discuss a plan B at the Hansen site and look exactly at what the Coastal Commission's issues were with the past project, which was a bad project, a two-story project, essentially closer to the beach and in a flood zone, and actually entertain that, because that has never happened yet.
Any other further comments? Okay, Joseph.
I suspect that this decision is going to encourage an increase in the intensity of discussions about this plant, and particularly the alternatives to this location. And inevitably, that discussion, people are going to be very opinionated about where it should be and why it should be there. And they're going to involve trade-offs. And most of the advantages, if not all the advantages, of the other locations at this point are speculative to various degrees. And I would ask those that are listening and have opinions about this project to think about the one thing that isn't particularly speculative, and which that is the federal low-interest loan, which is enormous in terms of reducing the cost of this project, probably to the tune of $65 or $70 million when spread over 40 years. And again, the estimates of this cost must incorporate the long-term financing expense, because unlike somebody who typically purchases a home and is saddled with a mortgage, this will obligate successive generations. And so it's only fitting that the total cost be evaluated when trying to evaluate what things are going to cost and what they should be.
Okay. Final comments from final comments from Planning Commission? Do we have any final comments from staff? Okay. At that point, I'll adjourn this joint meeting.
Likewise adjourned.
Okay. Thanks for everybody. There was a tremendous amount of work that was done by the public, and it's been appreciated.